Hello and welcome to another episode of Honest to a Malt with myself, Duncan, and this week Mike has become a new dad. So much congratulations to Mike. All our thoughts are with him and his wife Laura. And just like on phone call-ins on the radio, where people call in and say, I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, today we've got a first-time co-host, maybe has listened to some episodes, Ben Whiskey with Molly. Welcome.
Duncan, how are you? Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, I'm grand, thanks. And Ben, what's the name of the episode today?
This is episode 29, and as we are talking about whiskey festivals, the name of the episode is The Longest Lanyard.
In the spirit of the pod, Ben, what's been in your glass? What's in your glass now? What's been in your glass last week? And what indeed has been up your arse?
A little less conversation, a little more action. What's been in your glass, Whiskey with Molly?
So in my glass currently, I have one of Roy Aquavita's Arden Americans, one of the Barfly Arden Americans. I got both of them, and currently in my glass is the 413 cask. And yeah, they're just fascinating, Duncan. It's the same liquid put into a refill hogshead, left for the same amount of time. Yeah. And the only difference is what Adelphi liquid was in the barrels before. And they are two completely different drams. Right. And they're both lovely. Both really, really nice. But yeah, I kind of got the FOMO and had the
vibe. Have you got a favourite then of the two?
Like... So they're both unpeated refill.
Oh, here you go. They're both the best whiskey ever.
No. What I was going to say is they're both...
I mean, because you've got to have one that you think is slightly edging it.
100%. And it's the 411. Yeah. And the reason for me is I get smoke on it. But there is no smoke in the makeup of the whiskey or the barrel whatsoever. But I do get a little bit of smoke. Just a hint. But like a little bit
just a hint
of smoke on it, which for me...
So did anybody else get that as well? Or is it just you?
A few people have, yeah. The majority no, but a few people have. But it's just got that lovely, salty, Arden American fresh fruit. And then that little bit of smoke on it as well. For me, the 411 is lovely.
I think that, Arden is something that I've been getting more into. I saw everybody really bigging it up. And I heard everyone talking about it. And now I've had a few, not loads, because, you know, you could have had loads. I've had a few. It's really, really excellent spirit, you know, like the, and even at sort of 7, 8 years, there's a lot going on in it, isn't there, really? So it's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I think why it's went down well with everyone is because it's good quality and it's good value. I mean, some of their releases for me haven't blown me away. They haven't been outstanding. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's nice whiskey. But some of the releases have been really excellent. Some of the single cast stuff I've been lucky to taste has been lovely. But they're just really nice people as well. Like, I've, you know, been lucky enough to meet a few of them. They're really nice.
Hold the door open for you if you're walking.
Exactly. You're not going to slam it in your face, you know.
That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Open the door for you. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Welcome in, please buy a bottle. £90, yes.
So that's been in my glass list.
But those ones that those ones from Aquavita were more expensive, right? I mean, they were a bit pricier.
They were, yeah. I mean, but they were single casks again. Well, were they a bit pricier? They were a bit pricier than standard release Arden American, but they're not standard release Arden American. They're single cask, and I thought the price was absolutely fine.
Arden American! All right, and what else has been in your glass then, Ben?
So I also picked up the new Kings Barnes Bellrock cask strength. A while ago, they released a 46%. Off it, and I enjoyed that, and this is everything dialed up to 11. It's 61.1%. It's toffee apple, it's pecan pie, it's 30% bourbon, 70% Oloroso sherry, and it's just, for me, it's a tick, 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 everything I love in a whiskey, and yeah, really enjoying that as well.
Yeah, nice. I think Bellrock, I think I remember seeing something come out called that from Kings Barnes in 2022. So maybe that was the
46% version.
Lower ABV. Yeah, 46%. Yeah, okay, yeah. My one of my mates actually texted me to me. He thought it was pretty cool. He likes Kings Barnes ever since he tried Dream to Dram. And I like Dream to Dram, although some people said they thought it was a bit too young, you know, too much cereal in it and whatever. But I thought it was kind of like good, you know, good profile of a young spirit.
Yeah, it's a distillery that doesn't get a lot of I was going to say love. It gets plenty of love, but it doesn't get a lot of promotion, I suppose. I just wanted to throw that in there as well because I'm enjoying that.
Cool. Has there been anything else in the last week you've been enjoying drinking?
I've had this cold, so no. I've been taking it easy.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, Lemzips. Yeah. How about you sit like a bad cold? Actual cold?
I've just had it a long time and it's just got really annoying now.
So is that what's been up your arse this week? Is it the cold or something else?
I thought as I was standing in for Mike, and I'll not go on about it, but Mike would have said the same thing, just with a different coloured jersey on. Wales obviously went out of the Rugby World Cup at the weekend. Ireland went out of the Rugby World Cup at the weekend. So for us, the Rugby World Cup is dead now. There's no more interest in it. Move on.
Oh, that was great. This is some great games to watch still. You can watch a fantastic game between England and South Africa.
Well, hopefully I will enjoy that, but for different reasons than you, maybe.
England are going to get absolutely annihilated.
I would have thought so, but it would be very England to turn South Africa over.
You've listened to the pod a bit, and so you'll know that basically I haven't really been watching rugby, but all this chat on the pod had made me start watching rugby again. I genuinely used to watch it when I was younger, and played it a little bit, so I remembered all the rules except like the real new stuff, but you can figure out how the sin bins and things like that are working. It's not that complicated, is it? And what I would say is I feel like I've peaked on rugby viewing because the three games I watched at the weekend, two of the three were incredible.
I've watched rugby for 44 years, Duncan, and those two games are two of the best games I've ever seen in my life.
So I feel like I'm going to officially retire from watching rugby after this World Cup. That's it. Because you know, it's like football. We watch so much football and so much of it is pretty dull, really, to be honest. You live with the good games. If you could just watch the good ones, I'd take
that. Absolutely. Yeah, go back to your videos of 101 great goals. That's all you need.
Yeah. I'll just be watching videos of Cantona over and over again. Yeah.
That was only a pretend one to cover for Mike. But the actual thing that's been on Mars this week is I went back to Ireland with my family and that. Scotland to Ireland route airline is pretty much got a monopoly from Ryanair and EasyJet. So you got to travel one of them, right? So we.
Yeah, it's going to be. It's bad or bad.
So we traveled Edinburgh to Belfast. And for the three of us, it was £72 return, which was phenomenal value.
Feels cheap.
But Ryanair's Ryanair. And, you know, if you've got matching shoes on, you have to pay an extra £20. And
not allowed on in trainers.
So we wanted to take a bag with us, not a hold bag, just a bag, a 10 kilogram cabin bag, and it cost us £40 each way, which was the more than the three of us to get a ticket. It's ridiculous.
It is ridiculous, but I presume that's because that 10k bag was slightly over their standard size or something.
No, that's the standard cost to take a 10k cabin bag between. Oh, Edinburgh you just and
there's
Belfast.
No.
No, though it wasn't overweight.
Right, if you want anything,
that's just the cost.
It wasn't like in that episode of Friends where it was all clothes and you could have just worn the clothes between you, just lay it up, right, and then just kept moaning about how hot it was on the plane, just calling the air hostess or the air steward over, going, "Excuse me, it's very hot in this airplane," and they're like, "Sir, you are wearing 7 t-shirts." Yeah. You're like. Yeah, all right.
The irony of it was we needed the bag anyway, but my secret plan, unbeknown to the wife, was that my friend Tony, North Coast Drams, had picked me up a bottle of Springbank 10 in Northern Ireland. So I was going to pick that up off him and bring it back. And it was only when my wife looked at me and said, "How are you going to bring it back?" And I said, "Well, I've got a cabin bag. It's fine." She said, "No, it needs to be in the hold for you to bring a bottle of whiskey back." So that whole plan fell on its backside, and the bottle of whiskey is sitting at my parents' house still.
It's probably getting drunk right now. They're like, it's what you would have wanted. I've got a bottle for you as well, haven't I? I've got that bottle of Tandy Batch Strength I haven't posted yet. So you're not having a great couple of weeks in terms of people getting bottles to you, or you'll be able to get them back.
So yeah. I think I've done Mike justice there in a couple of moans, which is, you know, what he's asked me to do to stand in, make sure you get a couple of moans in. So it's good. But what's been in your class this week, Duncan?
Well, I've been smashing the blended malt. I think you can see that there. This is a bottle of Thompson Bros 2001 vintage age 20-year-old blended malt sherry cask, something or other. You know what it's like. It's just way too easy to drink. It's about 45%. So I shared that with a couple of friends. We put a dent in it and I've probably done the majority of it. And I also cracked one of the Loch Lomond 18-year-old bottles that I got from
Waitrose
cellar or whatever, 58 quid. Yeah, I think I bought three of them. So that's one half gone now, which, you know, sounds bad. It's probably been 10 days since the last pod, to be fair. I think that was popular amongst people as well. People have come around. They really like that, you know, 46%. So I've kind of had like a sort of low ABV week. The only thing I've opened which has been stronger than that was this Royal Mile Whiskies Loch Lomond, single cask, which I got from auction for about £35.
Oh, steal.
And yeah, I know, right? Well, the Thompson Brothers one was about 70 quid, which isn't a steal, but it's about what you would have paid, you know,
for a 20-year-old
if you could have got it. Because yeah, exactly. The Loch Lomond was a steal, and this, both Loch Lomonds were a steal. And this one on the back, it says creamy vanilla and fresh oak spice intermingled with ripe peaches and golden syrup and sweet icing sugar. And it is sweet. It's definitely got peaches in it and lots of vanilla. It's good. No bum notes. You know, it's a good single cask. I got a couple of other things in there. Definitely some nutmeg. It's decent. So that's probably been the sort of highlight of my week, I think. And I've just been trying to finish off some bottles still. I think like Glenmurray's on its last, Glenmurray Oloroso Warehouse one's on its last legs. And that Storning Somerton release is on its last legs as well. And I've been trying to get organized to post stuff out to people, including yourself, which I just do a little bit at a time. I just move it one step along, maybe put a sample in, put a label on a sample bottle, clean some sample bottles. It's such a chore. I love sharing drams with people, but when you have to go and bottle them and post them and all that kind of stuff, if you're busy, I like to think I'm double busy, then yeah, it's a bit of a problem. Yeah, that's probably the main
thing. The best way to do it, and this changed my whiskey sharing when I find out, is you don't need to go anywhere. The postman will come and pick them up from your house.
Oh, I've heard that, but it's not actually that far to the post. It's like a 20-minute walk, so I can't even blame the walk. I have to walk the dog all the time, you know, it's like with dogs. It's mostly finding the right packaging and writing, you know, finding someone's address and then writing it on the envelope. Now I'm making it sound like it's not that much hassle, but at the time...
Oh, I have to get a pen.
What tends to happen is once I've had a few drinks and I'm online on Twitter or whatever, I'll message someone and say, oh, yeah, have you tried this? And then I'll say, no, you have some. And they'll say, oh, okay, do you want to do some swaps? And then I feel bad if I don't follow up. So then I have to follow up.
I think we've all been there at like midnight on a Saturday when you're speaking to someone on Twitter and they go, oh, I'll send you a sample. And you just go, no, you won't. You won't remember this in the morning.
I always remember. It can just take me like up to 4 weeks. You know, that's probably the main thing. I've still been smashing that. I got a listener complaint from Paul. Apparently we said aviary, which is an aviary is where you store birds, not, is it apiary or something? Anyway, I have to play a clip at the end of this. He's corrected us with a listener correction. So anything else we've got wrong, feel free to send it in. And then what's been up my ass has been pretty much my hair's getting longer and I can't be bothered to go and get it cut. I'm just trying to ride it out for as long as possible. And every day I sort of go, basically I'm in between hairdressers. So the hairdresser I've got is very funny. He makes me laugh, but he's terrible at cutting hair. And the other hairdressers I've been to locally also aren't very good. And I refuse to spend more than about £15 on a haircut. And so I'm just kind of like in limbo. What do I do? Do I grow it and see if I can make it look good? This is why I try every time. And I, spoiler alert, it's going to look terrible.
I just thought you were going for a caveman vibe.
Yeah. So my hair's been annoying me. Our daughter has got into a book called Fox with Socks or something. And it's basically like the War and Peace of tongue twisters.
Okay.
Which is, I kind of enjoy it. But at the same time, it feels like a chat. She's laying me down a challenge. She's like, can you do this 70-page book flawlessly?
70 pages? Wow.
Yeah, fast, right? And so she's like, this is really good. And I'm like, this is really an effort. But at the end, I'm like, you know, pat on the back. So that's probably been the things that have been annoying me the most. And if I get a haircut, I would be reminded that I will look slightly human again.
I can recommend to you, a bit far for you obviously, but there's a Turkish hairdresser in Edinburgh. I haven't been to, but my friend used to go to it. And the first time he went in, he had a fight with his missus or something like that. And the Turkish barber was all dead chatty to him. And very politely he turned around and he said, look, mate, I'm not really in the mood for it today. Can you just cut my hair and sort of less of the chat? And the guy was like, oh, sorry, sir. And for the next 8 years, every time he went into that barber's, not hairdresser's, barber's, the barber said, "Ah, sir, yeah, come and sit down." And he looked at him and he went, "Talk or no talk?" And that was what he said to him for the next 8 years.
But I love the chat. So my hairdresser, guy called Zach, doesn't talk about stuff, but he's so bad at cutting hair. I openly joke with him about how bad he is at cutting hair. And he's laughing. He's going, "Oh, this guy," there's other customers. And he's going, "This guy." I'm like, no, Zach, you're really bad at cutting hair. I just come here because you're funny, right? Because you can cut hair well, but he just doesn't put any effort in. I think if you cut that many people's hair, you can't be bothered anymore. If you're doing like 50 people a day. You know, I often think to myself, what's the worst time of day to go into a barber's? Is it in the morning when they're still waking up? Is it, you know, just before lunch when they're hungry and they're trying to rush through it? And I try to sort of strategically think about, when can I go where he's going to actually be concentrating during the day? And that's how I structure my visit to the hairdresser. I go, if I go in and there's three people, I can't be bothered to queue. So I'm immediately out, because then he's rushing as well. And he goes, no, you'll be fine. It's only going to be 30 minutes or 15 minutes. I'm like, that's the problem. You're going to rush three people.
I'm also going to have...
I don't want to be the next
I'm also going to have to call you out. Do you go to a barber or a hairdresser?
Barber, I guess. It's a barber. Yeah.
I've been to a hairdresser since
I was like 25. No, I haven't been to a hairdresser since I was like 25 or whatever. And they charge you £40 to give you a coffee and a biscuit.
Yeah, a free coffee and a biscuit.
Would you like your free coffee? Yes, please, I would. How much was it again? £40. Oh, okay, yeah.
Exactly.
And do I get another free coffee? I think so. I'll just check with the manager. All right, so we said today we were... basically, I've been really getting into blended malt. I think we're coming to sort of blended malt season and, you know, sherry season and heavy peat season, aren't we? So I thought it'd be really good to ask you as a co-host today. You seem to be pretty passionate about independent bottlers. So I thought a little middle segment. What would you say at the moment, Ben, are the best value independent bottlers? Not the best value, because everyone's chasing value at the moment.
So I got into indies when, you know, I was on my whiskey journey and I kind of fell, not down a rabbit hole, but of like, I realized there was so much out there, and you go through the core range and then you go, okay, I've done that now. And I didn't really have a lot of wish to go back and revisit it because I'd done it and I experienced it. And then I found IBs and I realized that they were doing things with spirit that the distillery the spirit was from aren't doing to that spirit, and you could just have so much more different experiences with that. Indie prices 2-3 years ago were amazing value. They are creeping up now. Blended malt is probably because there's some really good ones out there, but it's probably replacing that value indie single malt proposition just now coming in. But yeah, I'm not getting indies because of the value proposition. I'm getting indies because they do some fabulous stuff, as I say, that like distilleries wouldn't normally do with their own spirit.
How about if I asked it a different way? Because I agree with you, by the way. Obviously, indies are doing stuff that, you know, they're doing cask finishes or maturations that, you know, typically won't be done by... That's not always the case. Some distilleries are very experimental, but sort of generally, right? Or they're getting hold of like, you know, stock from distilleries that, you know, won't even come out directly, you know, like Ben Nevis and a lot of the Diageo ones as well. You're only going to get it for an IB. So that's fair enough. But if you were reading my mind, right, staring into my soul, I bet you could name what I think are, I've got like five names written down for like what I think are the best value independent bottlers. I bet you could guess three of them.
Best value.
As in, they regularly put out affordable bottles.
Oh, you've put me on the spot, now. I'm going to say Master of Malt.
Yeah, that's one of them. It's one of them. And Master of Malt at the moment, I don't know what they're doing, but they must need to shift some real volume, because they've currently put on their Master of Malt range, which I think is great, by the way. They've put on, if you buy five, you get one free. I mean, that's mad. I was sitting there staring at six bottles going, I don't need six bottles. This actually makes these legitimate value, right? I was like, you know, I'll just chuck in a 25-year-old blended malt. I mean, it's only going to be 75 quid.
Yeah.
You know, overall, or it's like a £90 bottle free. But That feels mad if that's where the whiskey market is. I mean, they're stocking up and they're stocking up six bottles at once. I know we do it, but we tend to do it because we've picked certain bottles we really want to try. We've not bought six impulse bottles.
No, totally. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's but it yeah. it plays to our, I was gonna say strengths, but I actually mean weakness. When you think you're getting something for free. What's the same with that Tamdu cast strength that you Jimmy?
I think if it was like four for three, they obviously can't do that on the margins, but I just feel like impulse buying like six bottles to get one free is maybe even a stretch too far for me, but tremendous value anyway. Yeah. In that range. So that's one. What else do you think?
Okay,
is in the
I'm
going to
go
five.
Depend on what you mean by value, because they're not cheap, but I think the great value is James Edie.
Yes, that is one I've got written down. See?
And I'm going to go, you probably.
Because they've got the whole range. They've got lower range. They've got like, you know, where they'll throw together a few bottles for sort of 40-ish quid.
And I think I've yet to have a bad James Edie.
I agree.
You know, well, we don't need to, you and me don't need to talk about that Kalila Palo Cortado cask because it's just
We haven't ever talked about it on, it was phenomenal, yeah. It's still around.
Well, there's different versions of it. I've got a 10-year-old and an 11-year-old version of it.
Yeah, I've seen they've done different age statements. All Kalila's different age statements, Palo Cortado finish, slightly different lengths of finish on them as well from James Edie. If you see that, buy it on the
site. You may have written down, but I may disagree with you because of the barrier to entry, SMWS.
No, I didn't write that down. I don't think they represent value anymore. I just think they're one of the best because of the range that they do. Yeah, so if I was doing a best, they would be in it. But best value, no.
Okay.
Any shouts for any more?
I'm going to go either one-off Carnmore or Dranmore.
No, I didn't put those down either. I mean, why? So go on. What, Carnmore or Dranmore, why would you say they're best value?
I just think they're putting out really good stuff at a decent price, the exact definition of value.
Decent price. Maybe I've overlooked those. Okay, I didn't write those down. Do you want me to tell you or do you want to keep guessing?
Okay, I'll go for one last guess then. I'm going to go Berry go Brothers.
No, I don't think they represent value anymore at all, although obviously they have access to some really great casks. I actually went for, you got Master of Malt, James Edie, and then I think probably Whiskey Broker.
Okay, yeah.
But we're talking value, not quality, because it's hit and miss, right? You know, and then I put down, slightly controversially, the Whiskey Barrel, because whilst they have some ridiculous prices, sometimes they just chuck out some really, really ridiculously good value stuff and everyone buys it. You know, we'll be looking online and there'll be 40 people in the whiskey community who've got the same bottle and they're all enjoying it. And it's like, you know, pretty epic. Other than that, I think that's pretty much it, really. I mean, Murray McDavid have a value range, but, you know, and obviously, you know, all the ranges, you know, like entry point range and mid range and luxury range and ultra luxury range. But in terms of like, who would you go to look at like constant value? I'd be looking at Master of Malt. I'd be looking at Whiskey Broker, James Edie. They'd be my top three, I think.
Yeah, I think that's a fair.
So I sort
I think
of agree with what you're
show.
Saying.
Yeah.
It's that
balance between looking for the good value whiskey. But as you say, some of them can be hit and miss. And all of a sudden you've spent 40 quid in a bottle of whiskey, which you think is good value, and then you taste it and go, I wish I'd saved that 40 quid.
I know. I wish I'd spent an extra 20 quid and got something decent. People don't talk about that enough, do they? Like these cheap bottles that aren't really that good.
Yeah, I mean, and like, I've still got it sitting on my shelf. It's a while ago now. I think they've just done another one, which was the Master of Malt Secret, was it Speyside or something, that was like 25 quid, and people were going, oh, 25 quid, you can't not buy it. Well, let me tell you, you can.
You can. You could let that one slip past quite easily. The last one I bought from Master of Malt was the Secret 10-year-old, which tastes like a Lafroy to me. But I mean, that generally would be put under Williamson, wouldn't it, or whatever. So I don't know, but that's what it tastes like. But who cares? Yeah. It's very good, you know. So, you know, it doesn't really matter what it is. But aside from that, I'm sort of always looking out at auctions to try to pick up some of these value IBs because they were already cheap, because they're already a low price. Ooh. Because they are already a reasonable price, if someone chucks them up at auction, generally they're not going for, they're going for sensible.
Well, I think the other thing with them as well is bottle collectors aren't after them. generally.
Yeah, because they've got rubbish labels.
You know, so, you know, people are buying IBs to open and drink. People are not buying them to sit on the shelf and increase in value.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you didn't mention like Chortle yeah. whiskey, for example, or, you know, like I'm drinking this Thompson Brothers, you know, which is tremendous, and they've got a very good, you know, is it 5 or 7 year old blend mm-hmm. or whatever. But generally speaking, you know, there's a premium for the artwork, mm-hmm. isn't there? So if you're literally just after the liquid inside the bottle, who cares about the label? Yeah. So they're the ones that aren't getting, I remember there was one released from Thompson's Brothers, I think it was Thompson's Brothers, which had like a unicorn. There was another one with a badger and everyone was after the badger.
Yes, that's
the
right. Yeah. Remember the badger one?
And I'm sure there was good whiskey, but I think people were more just chasing the fact it had a badger or a unicorn. I think one was a Daddy Wan, and I think the unicorn, the badger was a Daddy Wan, and the unicorn was a Feta Ken, right?
Don't know.
I think, from memory. I mean, anyway, I mean, point is, I didn't buy either of them, but I feel like people were chasing for the label, right?
That's fine.
Yeah. So there you go. That's our top three collaborated value IBs. Our whiskey Broker Master of Malt, James Eady, and Ben gave a shout out to Drambore
and Carmore.
Yeah, 100%. You're toughing out here with a cold. I'm impressed.
Nah, little Drambore whiskey's helping that.
You're getting, if you just get a little bit worse, you might get onto the sort of sexy husky voice. Like
20 pack of Rossmans before sort of, we started.
Yeah, you're like, you're in limbo in between. You haven't quite got to that sort of, that sort of husky level.
ASMR.
You still sound
ASMR
Ill.
Master.
Yeah. All right. So our main section today, the pod is called The Longest Lanyard, right? And so we thought we would recant some of the things that you should definitely do and not do, maybe a bit tongue-in-cheek, at whiskey festivals. Now, it's my understanding that you may have attended one or two whiskey festivals in the past.
I've been known to frequent the odd festival, Duncan. Frequent. I think that's where we first met.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, we must have. I think we met Kendall for the first time, I think. Yeah. When did you start going to these whiskey festivals then?
Relatively recently. And it was kind of the point I was going to finish on, but I'll just start on it, which is I used to go for the whiskey and now I go for the people.
Oh, my days. What a beautiful thing to say.
But it's true.
Can I make the point? Yeah, it is true, isn't it? Because you can get good whiskey anywhere, but you won't see your online whiskey mates, whiskey friends, unless you go to the festival.
Yeah, and,
right?
And it's not just, you know, it's not just the online community as well, but it's nice speaking to. I mean, the worst whiskey festival I've ever been to was one in Edinburgh that, well, name unnamed, but it's an Edinburgh whiskey festival. And I hated it because I went up to tables and I was asking people about, oh, what's this whiskey and this, that and the other. And I'm paraphrasing, but the response I got was, don't know, mate, I'm just paid to stand here and pour drams.
Okay, can you? I'm just paid here to stand and pour 10 mil.
Yeah, you know, but they like literally, they were just part-time agency people, just paid to stand behind a thing. They knew nothing about what they were pouring, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't asking geeky questions. I was like, you know, what cask is this finished in? No idea.
Wait, I've got a colour chart. Can you tell me what cask, what colour the cask was of this chart?
What temperature is your Dunwich warehouse now?
Yeah. Oh, dear me. Yeah. So, well, I've been to a few. I used to go to beer festivals. I think we said on the pod before, you know, I've been drinking whiskey since I was allowed to drink, and I've got more and more into it gradually during my life. I'm relatively new to going to whiskey festivals. It's not, in fact, I'm relatively new to this whole online whiskey community thing, but I just used to drink whiskey. Times were simpler then. So I didn't realize that whiskey festivals were really a thing, I guess, until I really got onto sort of whiskey Twitter. And it's not something I ever would have really looked for because, truth be told, I used to go to the odd beer festival, but I wasn't the kind of like hardcore beer festival guy. Like I always think there's really good pubs, just like these really good whiskey bars, where guess what? You can try loads of whiskeys or loads of beers, right? I think the difference is, and this is when I realized that whiskey festivals were a thing worth doing, is for some of them, it depends on the festival, you can just pay an entrance fee and then it's like going to a buffet.
It's an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Now we're talking. So what would you say are some of your top tips?
So just as you've described, I think everyone who would be willing to admit it would say that that was their first experience of what, hang on, I can pay 40 quid and drink whiskey for 4 hours for free.
Yep.
And
it's not free, but I mean,
yeah, you don't have to pay anything extra above your ticket. And I think when I have been to whiskey festivals, and with me as well, I don't know whether it's my body, my consumption or whatever, but you know, I'm fine on whiskey, and then I go over a cliff really fast.
I don't hit a cliff of whiskey down for me.
It's, you know, like I've been at Glasgow Whiskey Festival. Fine. Yeah. 4 hours at Glasgow Whiskey Festival. Finished the main course at the Indian restaurant afterwards, and I just stood up, threw money on the table, and said, "Guys, I'm going to bed."
Well, you said threw. I thought you were going to say something else. So, money on the table was actually the best result.
I needed to pay something for the meal, and I just, because I had a hotel booked in Glasgow, I was like,
"So you threw a £2 coin on the table?" You said, "Lads, I'm off."
It's just because it just hit me immediately. But it's been a learning curve going through. You know, I think you have to experience it to understand what your limits are at these festivals. And I now have a rule at whiskey festivals where I don't taste anything I've tried before.
I don't think I do that. I think, okay, I don't do that with the exception of Tam Duwaiton. Okay. Okay. I'll make an exception, for example, for something like Tam Duwaiton, but everything else, I'm only going to be trying new stuff. But at festivals, most stuff is sort of newish. It's just the kind of newer distilleries that you would have tried most of their stuff often that are sort of situated.
Is that
around.
True? Because, like, you know, I'm trying to think about Glen Scotia, right? We've all tried Glen Scotia's Core Range, right? So it's five, six whiskies that I'm not going to say waste because I don't mean waste, but you only have a certain limit you can drink at a festival.
Yeah,
so
you
let's
shouldn't
not
be,
waste
you,
it on
you,
stuff
you,
we've
you
had before.
You shouldn't be going and trying stuff you've tried before unless you really love it and you can't afford to buy a bottle at home, right? If you can't afford to buy a bottle, you know, that's fine. Go and drink it. But if you can afford to buy a bottle and you haven't got a bottle, there's a reason you haven't bought a bottle of that. Why go and drink it at a festival? If you can't remember what it tastes like, it's been 5 years since you tried it, fair enough. But if it's been like 6 months, what's the point? Right? You know, you want to try something new, something different.
Yeah, absolutely. You know? And I think the other thing I learned as well, which was, you know, a couple of times we've, in the early days, before we went to the whiskey festival, we'd meet in the pub beforehand as a starting point. And it's like, no pints
you need
before
to get
whiskey festival.
No pints. Actually, that's a funny thing, and my body can't handle liquid volume, so I can go to a whiskey festival and be fine, but it's the pints afterwards, as you've seen.
That's the photographic evidence of.
which will make me fall into a seated slumber. I just can't handle lots of pints. I've never been able to handle lots of pints since I was about 25 or 28 or whatever, so it's years ago now. And I think everyone's wired differently. Whiskey, I can just go on and on and on and on, and my face just gets redder, like, you know, redder like the sun. But that doesn't matter. And, you know, you drink water in between, so it's fine. So I was thinking of the things that, like, okay, so tongue-in-cheek not-to-dos, right? Or things that, you know, so first thing is definitely keep your coat on. I don't know what it is when you go to a whiskey festival. So many people go in and still have their coat on, even though it's raging hot, right? You're like walking around and everyone's got their coat on and everyone's got like their coat and a jumper and a t-shirt. I think it's just a lack of storage space or whatever, or people don't want to put their coat in. So everyone's wandering around in their jackets and you're going to be there for 4 hours and yet people are just wandering around in their jackets, in their jumpers, in their shirts or t-shirts, or, you know, or ladies in their coats and dresses or whatever it is, their coats and jumpers and whatever. But everyone, I don't know what it is, but people often just wander around. I don't know if it's like they've got stuff stuffed in all the pockets that they need, right? You know, I look back, like, there was Kendall published, one of those advertising signs, you know, those stand-up ones you put out, and they had it at the Lakes this week, and Phil posted a picture of it, and myself and Paul, Newcastle, not from Newcastle, what's the other one? Gateshead Paul, are in the picture, so we're famous, right? Guess what I'm wearing?
A coat.
A raincoat. Why am I wearing a raincoat?
You were whiskey spotting. Did you have binoculars around your neck?
And I might as well have been that rain jacket is like wearing a bin liner, right? Like, it's, I don't know if I was trying to cut weight or something whilst I was like in there. I don't understand it. So definitely take your coat off. Don't fall into that.
I tell you, now, go on, I was going to say, another one I have as a friendly piece of advice is, when you work your weight in front of the table, and you're speaking to the person behind the table, and they pour you a dram, and you've had a two-minute chat with them, move out of the way.
Move out of the way. Just move back so other people can get to the desk. Don't stand at the front and just hold the space. I was trying to think what the equivalent is in the rest of life. You get people like that other places. It's very inconsiderate. But you'll be able to get back to the front. Honestly, once you've had a bit of a chat, you're right. You want to go and just stand to the side and just enjoy the whiskey for a bit, right? Or whatever it is you're doing. But yeah, some people just insist on standing at the desk for like 20 minutes.
Sometimes they're not even talking to the ambassador. They're just chatting to their mate.
That's when they're just resting on the couch. Resting on the couch because there's no chairs.
That's true.
They're just using it as support, right?
Why is there not a lot of chairs at whiskey festivals?
There's never chairs at whiskey festivals. I don't know, but if I ever do a whiskey festival, if we do the Honest to a Malt whiskey festival, there's going to be bloody chairs everywhere. I mean, everywhere. You won't be able to move for chairs.
Just in case you need a rest.
just in case you need a rest. Sofas, deck chairs. I remember going to the Great British Beer Festival, not this year, but I think last year, and they had a whole section with deck chairs, right? And shout out to my mate Sean. We're sitting in this, and Sean might be a big lad. And Sean probably won't be listening to this, but his mate Sam will be, and I think Sam was there. And Sean's deck chair collapsed. No. He had like 2 pints.
Oh, no.
It just completely went flat. But the point is they had deck chairs, right? So, you know, that's what you need, like a deck chair section or something. A lot of whiskey festivals are just very functional, aren't they? So we can also do this as suggested improvements for whiskey festivals.
Oh, well, number one, silent disco.
Silent disco, yeah. Silent disco, deck chair section. Yeah. I don't know what else they could do, but I mean, probably a bacon butty stand would be a good start. it's often just like a cheese room or something like that, or you have to leave the venue to go and get food, which can be dangerous because then the cold air.
You know the other thing, like my biggest quandary at a whiskey festival is there's like a master class on and you're like, that really interests me, but it's going to take up 45 minutes of my festival time. And you just don't.
Yeah, it's a quandary. It's a quandary.
You just don't know whether, you know, is it worth the 45 minutes?
I think it depends. What I do is, generally speaking, is do one in like a 4-hour window, because you can get around everything you need to do in 3 hours with your mates and meeting people. You can see people.
It depends. Have you been to Glasgow Whiskey Festival? You will not get around that in 4 hours.
I've never been to Glasgow Whiskey Festival, but I'll sneak my e-scooter in if I come. I don't have an e-scooter.
it's you can easily, like, the worst part of Glasgow Whiskey Festival is when you're halfway round and you look at your watch and go, oh no, there's only half an hour left.
Do they have like an, because I've not been to that one and everyone says it's the best, but do they have like an optimum route, like the most efficient
route
round?
It's just two big holes. Like, so it's at Hampden, the National Stadium. So yeah, it's just two huge rooms, but you just get,
with like everyone from all around the world.
Yeah, so it's not even the sheer volume of whiskey stands, which there is, but you take two steps and then like meet somebody else, you know, so you then like, there's another 10 minutes gone.
Because everyone's there, right? Everyone's there. Yeah. I'm the kind of guy, I don't go to Glastonbury. I might go to Camden to watch like an evening session, a single day of bands playing. Or I'll go and watch a gig with three bands on. I won't do the 3-day festival. I don't tend to go to the biggest things. I tend to go to the sort of small and mid-sized things. So I'm, you know, doing things like Somerton, Kendall.
And there's a lot to be said about that. And I think if Glasgow wasn't on my doorstep, you know, would I be trying? You know, like, I sort of go to Whiskey Live in London because that's a hassle for me. But I'll go to Glasgow.
Of course, it's too big for me as well.
You know, so yeah, there's a balance to it as well. But was it the first time I was at Glasgow Whiskey Festival? Anyway, one of the times I was at Glasgow Whiskey Festival, and I kind of knew Two Poods from Blind Drams, but didn't know him. Like, you know, sort of recognize him from that. And I'm standing at the SM WS table, and it's really, really busy. So I'm about sort of three back, and there's a guy serving. I'm like, all right, Mike, how's it going? The guy kind of looks at me, and I was like, oh, he didn't hear me. And he looks at me again. And I'm like nodding and smiling, and you know, and then I'm like, this is a bit rude. I mean, he definitely knows who I am. And then on like a blind dram 3 weeks later or something like that, I said to Mike, I was like, oh, how'd you get on working? You were at the SMWS table at Glasgow Whiskey Fest. He was like, no, I wasn't. I just completely mistaken him for somebody else that looks like they enjoyed two foods.
Well, I'm surprised that person didn't say, oh, I'm not
Mike. I think
Mike.
We just thought,
but,
I was,
you know, usually people are friendly at whiskey festivals. Yeah. Hey, like whiskey pours. This, look, Loman, Royal Mile Whiskey single cask, which, face it, is probably still on sale. Because I think £78 is very good. It's actually excellent. Beautiful. Like, I will stick you a sample of this in with what I have
by
to
By the time
post
you post it, this is going to be a shipping container, Duncan.
it's just one bottle of Tandu Batch, whatever, Tandu Batch 8 or something. And then you've got a sample of Loch Lomond Distillery Edition 1.
One, yeah.
And then now you're going to have a sample of Loch Lomond Single Cask RMW, because you like, you're an LL
fan,
of course.
Right? Yeah, lucky enough to tour it a couple of weeks ago.
So, other stuff, which is on my list of things that you should be careful. So, I have a real bugbear about if I go to a festival, I want to have, like, we talked about the longest lanyard, right? I mean, they are very functional, right? Then you got two free hands. So it's a bit nerdy, but obviously the Glencairn lanyard or the Capita lanyard is a bit of, what would you say, next level whiskey festival.
It's so practical, but like in all things like that, I have become my dad, because my dad's a very practical man. And I used to think, what are you doing, Dad? It looks ridiculous. And then you get to a stage in life where you go, it doesn't look that ridiculous, and it's really useful and helpful.
So I think that's where the difference is. So I've seen these lanyards, and I get why people use them, but I haven't ever used one myself. In fact, I'm the kind of person that hates to even have like a tote bag or anything like that. So if I walk in and they hand me a bag, I'm immediately annoyed. I'm like, I don't want the bag. I don't know what to do with the bag. But the tip is, check what's in the bag. Because sometimes you haven't got any clue, but there's tokens. And those tokens equal drams at certain stands. So always check for the tokens. And then just see if somebody else can carry your tote bag. Just pass it to them. Just hold it out. You never know. Someone might take it off you. And you just say, they'll say, and you just don't say anything and just see how long they'll hold it for. They could hold it for 30 minutes.
Just pretend you're a volunteer at the festival and you're handing out bags. You've just removed the dram tokens from them.
There you go. I watched when people are walking in, they're handing out these bags, and you can see people going, oh, I don't want a bag. What's going on? I'm supposed to get this on the way out, not the way in. What they should do, tip for festival organisers, is take the hand them to people on the way out, but take the coins out and put those in a smaller bag, right? Or no, like a paper bag, so it's recyclable, and hand the paper bag with the coins to people. That's what they should do. Not hand people a bag full of brochures that no one's going to read because they've got 50 stands to go.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly.
If only we did whiskey festivals.
The most shocking thing is I can't believe you've never used a lanyard at a whiskey festival. It'll change your life.
I'm one of those people. I know it will. I've seen it. I know it's going to improve my life. But at the same time, I'm hanging on. I don't want to cut.
You're still too cool for it.
Speaking about dads, I'm actually taking my dad to Kendall this year, which... Yeah, because he lives really close to there. So it's going to be interesting because I don't think he drinks as much whiskey as I do. And he's bringing along a big ex-police fella or something. I don't know. Like, my dad did work in the police. He worked in construction. But this guy apparently can really put away booze. So and I've never met him. So it's like a roll of the dice. So I'm going along with my dad and one of his friends because we had a spare ticket because my wife is pregnant, so she can't go now. And we're not taking my mum because she's a liability. So.
And does this involve a trip to the new union afterwards?
Oh, 100%. Right, nice. Unless the taxi's booked for too early, but we can probably change the taxi time. So, next thing. This is a homage to Tupas, this one. So, Mike's top tip at Whiskey Festival. I'm sorry, I'm really laughing. When you go in, 100% find the highest ABV dram, whatever's over 70%, and just drink that and chat to the guy for about 20 minutes. And just ensure you've completely blasted your palate away so you can't taste anything else for the next 3 months.
Yeah. And make sure it's petered as well.
Don't do a two-puds. Don't do a mic. Definitely be careful about going for the really high ABV drams early on. You know, like, and same with going for like the really petered stuff early on. Suss it out and try to allow your palate to last as long as possible. It's a bit like when you go to like a perfume. If you go to like a perfume or aftershave, you know, you can only sort of remember five. And that's the sad thing about whiskey festivals. And that's why what Ben said earlier on is so true. You really go for the people, because the truth is, unless you really space them out, after a certain time, it becomes harder and harder to pick out stuff. It becomes more about the mouthfeel, right? What kind of mood you're in, right? And so, you know, trying like this, you know, if you're 3 hours into a festival and you're trying some 25-year-old single malt from an IB in some like red wine cask, the truth is your palate's shot. Yeah. And you're just drinking it because you wanna. But you might as well be drinking, you know, a good standard range, you know, 46-50%, because you are wasting that. But it's your right to do it, and I do the same thing. But at the same time, your palate's gonna be shot. So when you go, you need to look at the good stuff and just pace yourself. Go around, have a look, have a chat with people. Pick three stands where you think, I really want to try that. But it can be me hunting out like 1996 Glentockers or Ben Nevis. I'll go over to the stand and I'll try three or four of the whiskies and have a chat with them and make sure I'm enjoying that one.
Yeah, 100%. You're right. After about five or six, you're just gone in terms of being able to distinguish, pick out different flavors. But what I would say is, you can also not drink the full dram. And
yeah, I've always done that. I've never wasted any, but okay, go on.
And plenty of water. But 100%, if I'm at a table and they offer me a PT1 in the first half of a whiskey festival, I turn it down and come back to it.
Yeah, I just say I'll come back for it later. I'll come back later. I say, don't worry, I've got this. I'll be back.
The other thing is, don't let them bully you into, right, well, we'll start you off with this 10-year-old and work our way up to. Mm. No, skip all that if you've only got limited drams.
I don't mind that if it's a distillery that I really, or if it's not an independent bottler, but if it's a distillery, there's a difference. If it's a distillery and I don't know much, like we did that with Dunvilles, right? I had nothing about, or like, you know, bottler, right? But I had nothing about them. And I thought, okay, I'm going to go through it. We'll go through it. I did that with Dingle as well, because I knew nothing about Dingle when I met them for the first time. And so I went through and did, you know, 3, 4, 5, went through the range, took recommendations. But generally, I agree with you. I would say, generally, don't just go, like, if I go over to Tamdu and they're like, oh, you start with the 12. I'm like, I've had about 20 bottles of the 12. About 10 bottles of the 15 or 15 bottles of the 15 or whatever. I just haven't tried anything yet, can I? And they're like, okay, yeah, sure. And I'm like, you sure? And they're like, yeah, can I have another one? Yeah, that's fine. Okay, yeah. And then I went and bought a bottle after because it's so good, right? You know, and I think I tried like any new bottles they've got, which is obviously pretty limited with those guys that they've got on the stand because they're not putting single casks on those kind of stands. So next tip, and this is a tongue-in-cheek one. I could say to the straight face, always say you've got a huge collection of their whiskey. I see people doing it. They're over the stands going, yeah, I'm a collector of this. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I collect this. And they're going, okay, yeah. And there's a pause and they go, have you got any under the counter stuff? If I was on the stand, I'd go, have you got any pictures of that collection? How big is it?
I just skip the first stage. I've genuinely found, unless you're clearly there to get hammered, if you ask anyone if they've got under the table drams, they're generally quite okay with sharing them.
I think if they can, it just depends, doesn't it? I think majority of the stands, they're like, it's there, it's acknowledged. Some stands are like, they really want to hold it back. It just depends. Like, but most stands,
do you remember at Kendall last year, the guy trying to grab and run the bottle of Boonhaven? Yeah, there was a drunk guy tried to grab some really expensive bottle that David had under the table.
What, like a 25
like
or something?
No, it was some, it might have been a festival official release or something like that.
Falaios.
Yeah, police were called and had to take him out because he tried to do a grab and run.
No, I don't remember that. In fact, I never tried the under-the-counter Buna at that festival because I just don't think I was there at the right time or whatever. I also missed, I think, the famous under-the-counter of the Frog.
Oh, yeah.
I think that was, everyone was saying, was like their dram of the festival. But, you know, don't worry. I tried plenty of stuff across the whole festival. I can say. Yeah. And a lot that I would never drink again.
Yes, absolutely.
Right? So, other serious things is you definitely need to get some stodge in you before you go. I mean, you need to, if you're going to go and drink.
Yeah, go and see your mate at Greg's before the.
Yeah, go to Greg's. Get some sausage rolls or a pasty in or whatever. Get absolutely stodged up to the max, you know. And don't be shy about it because, as we said, there's very little food kicking around at these festivals often. Unless you're on the premium ticket.
Yeah, and you're drinking a lot of high ABV liquid, so let's face it, you know, you don't need to be a hero about it. Let's eat beforehand.
Yeah. What's your, I'm thinking I'd go to the next one. I'm wondering whether to get just a picture of Mike's face on a T-shirt. I might go to the next festival I go to, I might just have a picture of Mike's face on a T-shirt. And that way he'll be with me because he won't be there, right?
Yeah.
No. Do you brand up? Do you, because you're whiskey with money, right? Do you brand up? I've seen various branded people. I'm usually just in a jumper I've dug out of the bottom of the closet.
I have recently got one T-shirt made with Whiskey with Molly on it, and
there you go.
It's not for self promotion, but it was because I was finding myself in conversations with people and introduced myself as Ben normally, and it would only be like 45 minutes later they'd be like, oh, hang on. Or because somebody said something, are you Whiskey with Molly? Oh, right, yeah. And I'm just like, let's just save this 45 minutes and walk about with a badge on the T-shirt. That just, and it's nice because, as I say, I like going and meeting people. So it's actually nice in an egotistical way just to have people come up and go, are you Whiskey with Molly? Oh, yeah. So I'm whoever they are and stuff. And you just, it's great to start a conversation like that.
Yeah. So I guess for you, the next step would be sort of some sort of like business club or something.
Yeah. American Psycho style with the, paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Talking about films, it reminds me of like the whole Lanyard thing. And because you get a lot of Glencairns at festivals, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you get a Glencairn or you get Capita, you take it home with you. And you've seen Wayne's World where he goes, this is my collection of hairnets and name badges, my extensive collection. It's a bit like that. You know, people have been going to festivals for years. They have so many Glencairns.
Yeah, the challenge at your early festivals is getting them home in one piece.
Yeah.
You know,
that's true.
That's always challenging.
I managed to get six Capitas home from Whiskey Live last time. Six.
That's pretty impressive, especially with Capitas.
And I think I only took three out and I found three more outside. I was like, these aren't going to waste. Because what I do is I take, you know, like people that have left them in random places, or sometimes people just leave them outside the door. You just pick them up and wash them and get home and job done. So another top tip, definitely rinse some free glasses if they've been left outside.
100%.
100%. Definitely take your free glass home with you, right? Definitely. Yeah. So you got any other tips? I always think we talked about planning your route. We've talked about not going high ABV. Don't go PE first. Go with friends. Definitely be social. Have a T-shirt with a picture of Whiskey with Molly's face on it. What else have we talked about? Definitely load up on food first. Don't be sucked into, unless you really want to get to know the distillery, don't be sucked into doing all five or six drams off the stand. You don't have to drink the whole dram because, you know, it's your money at the end of the day.
It's a marathon, not a sprint, I think, is the overarching thing. You don't always have to have a dram in your hand.
No, you don't always have to have a dram in your hand, but... You know, we all know that once you've got a few in, you then you get into the crack of it, then you are like, then you're away, right? Then you're like, you're just on a day out.
Basically. Yeah, I heard somebody describe it recently, and it's like, you know, they were talking about the I don't like people that go to whiskey festivals just to get drunk, and then they corrected themselves and went, well, I mean, we all get drunk, but that's not the intention.
Too drunk.
But that's not the intention of
going.
Drunk, it's just a byproduct of going.
I mean, I think if you go there and you don't think you're going to get drunk, then I think, well, fair play to you, but it's maybe a little naive if you're going to go there and think you're going to try sort of like 30 10 mil drams or whatever. you know, or that's enough to get drunk. You know, anything more than that's getting excessive. I think my other top tip is, and this is just from personal experience, especially for people who haven't listened to every single pod episode, who are they? Is definitely don't, when you're walking home after you've had, or to wherever you're staying, after you've had a lot of whiskeys and possibly beers, definitely do not order the absolute hottest, spiciest food possible known to man, and then ask them to chuck fresh chilies on top of that, because, you know, lots of high strength alcohol and lots of chili is a recipe for disaster, right? So I think that if you drink a lot of whiskey, then you sort of probably already know that. But maybe the decision making has gone out, you know, the good decision making has gone out the window because you've had a few too many. But for me personally, that'd probably be my main lesson, is I want to be okay the next day. And a big part of that is somehow managing to not eat very spicy food after having a whiskey.
Well, I think if we're talking about home time after the festival, my last piece of advice would be to ensure you have your route planned home. So don't go to Kendal Whiskey Festival looking to get the last train back to Edinburgh. Panic that you don't know where the train station is. Miss your last train. Have to book into a hotel. Go to sleep in the hotel, only to wake up in the morning to realise your hotel is called the Station Hotel and is directly opposite the train station.
It's opposite the train station.
Definitely don't do that.
Oh, amazing, Ben. So before we close this off, have you got any other? Is there any other stories, whiskey-related festival stories you want to share, beyond the obviously incriminating picture you have of me sleeping in a chair, which I don't think is that bad. But
well, no, look, I think my... I suppose there is one, and this is really me bearing my soul here to your Honest to a Malt audience here. I had been to Glasgow Whiskey Festival, and I had tried Mike's beloved Springbank Local Barley, whatever release it was, can't remember. And I think I had been to another whiskey festival and tried it, and I thought it was okay. I was like, yeah, would I buy this bottle for 75 quid or whatever it was? Yeah, did I have FOMO over it? Not anymore. Now I've tried it. And I went to Fife Whiskey Festival, and Luvian's Bottle Shop were running the shop at Fife Whiskey Festival. And not intentionally, but I just happened to be one of the first like 10 people into the festival. Mm. And I realized that everyone was going direct to the shop. And I was like, oh, hang on, there's something going on here. And they basically had...
Just pause though there. Is that the festival? I think I saw a picture of that. Is that the festival where you turned up in running gear?
Absolutely not. I've never turned up to a festival in running gear.
There was this, but I heard there was some distance between the entrance and the stand.
No, it was genuine. I didn't really know.
You were seen stretching in the queue. There was video evidence of you stretching.
I didn't know what was going on. And anyway, so basically they had, Luvian's had the whole Springbank release. So they had the Kilkerran Sherry, the Kilkerran Port. They had Springbank 11. They had whatever else there was available at the time, some long rows. And I ended up buying a bottle of Springbank Local Barley, because by the time I got to the by the time there was only a few people in front of me, that they only had very limited bottles, I bought a bottle of this.
That's what I would have bought, 100%. Local Barley.
But I bought it, and here's where I'm bearing my soul, with the sole intention of selling it, because I knew on whiskey auction sites that bottle was going for nearly 600 quid.
That must be the sherry one.
Yeah, I just couldn't justify not to, and it's the only time I've ever done it, and I don't talk about it openly, but I'm also not really that ashamed of doing it.
No, I think it's honest to say that I've never sold a bottle of Springbank. But I can sort of understand it. I mean, the thing is, that would buy a lot of other bottles. You didn't really go out of your way, you just happened to be there.
And I had tried it twice before, and was like, yeah.
We said with Springbank before, particularly with sort of, you know, local barley, I think it's always best when it's like a Burbs cask. I think sherry really allows it to shine, in my opinion. It can be a bit hit and miss, the sherry edition. So it's probably a wise decision. But I'm sure there was some people listening.
Oh, I'm going to get so much abuse on my Twitter tonight.
You're going to get so much grief. Like, it was any hour, Ben. It's not too late. You just have to tell me.
No, we're honest to a malt, Duncan. Come on.
We're honest to a malt. You might become part of the unless there's a sort of, you know, a public public outrage of what you said. You might become a a regular stand-in host. We'll have to see. I'm going to say thank you very much for me today. Thank you very much for listening to Honest and Malt. This has been episode 29. You can follow us on at Honest and Malt. You can follow me on at Whiskey Tip. And you can follow Ben. Ben, thank you so much for co-hosting today.
More than welcome.
On at Whiskey with Molly.
Yeah, I've had a great time, Duncan. Thanks. Thanks for having me on.
Ah, you're welcome. You're welcome. Cheers for standing in. And until the next pod, thanks for listening.
Duncan, hi, it's Paul. Hope you're well. Just caught the latest podcast. Fantastic stuff. Really, really smashing it out of the box. Just a quick one. Approximately 30 minutes in, you clearly described that you procured some honey from an aviary. Now, I'm sure that you're more than aware an apiary is where the honey grows from the bees. So if you could just correct this minor indiscretion. Moving forward, I'm sure that your facts and figures will remain as accurate as ever. Take care, buddy. All the best.